I'm Dr. Daria Rose, and you're listening to The Daria Rose Show, where we bring a fact-based perspective to answer all those confounding questions that come up in our day-to-day lives. From achieving optimal health to making conscious choices about your purchases and raising kids that thrive, we are here to help you navigate your life with confidence. Hello, and welcome back to The Daria Rose Show. Today, I'm speaking to the award-winning chef, new dad, and all-around amazing human, Dave Chang. David Chang is the chef and founder of Momofuku. Since opening his first restaurant, Momofuku Noodle Bar, in 2004, he has received 6 James Beard Awards and has been recognized as GQ's Man of the Year and a Time 100 honoree. In 2018, Dave formed Majordomo Media. He is the host of the Dave Chang Show podcast and 2 Netflix original documentary series, Breakfast, Lunch, and Dinner, and Ugly Delicious. His cookbook, Momofuku, and memoir, Eat a Peach, are both New York Times bestsellers, and his new book, Cooking at Home, is coming out October 26th. Dave and I talk at length about feeding his picky toddler, Hugo. Yes, even Dave Chang has a picky toddler. As well as how he's been cooking at home for himself and his wife, Grace, who just actually had their second little boy. I'm sort of obsessed with his new book because the whole premise is how you can, nay, should, learn to cook without recipes so that you can make your own delicious food in your own kitchen. If you know me, you know how deeply I believe that recipes are one of the biggest barriers to becoming a great cook, and cooking at home can show you exactly how it is possible for anyone. We have a fantastic discussion, and I hope you enjoy. Dave, welcome to the show. Great to see you.
Hey, long time. It's been way too long, but it's great to see you.
Yeah, so you have a new little one. How's Gus?
He's great. He just got a clean bill of health today, and it's always nerve-wracking those first week or two, just because I know like Hugo had a bunch of like issues when he was born. So I don't know why I was expecting the same thing, but it was great to hear that Gus is healthy as can be. So that's all you can ask for.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations. It's wonderful. And Grace is doing well.
She is. This has gone a lot easier for her. I mean, listen, it's never easy from a guy's perspective. I mean, we don't do anything compared to whatever you guys have to go through. But just having witnessed the first pregnancy versus the second pregnancy, I think it has been an easier journey, as difficult as it is, than the first one. Yeah. And she's doing much better. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, I think that Hugo is probably 100% the cutest thing on the internet. I mean, I wait anxiously for all your videos about him. He's so freaking cute.
I feel so blessed to have him because my other friends with the kids, they almost say the same thing. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here, but I wish I could keep on posting stuff publicly, but there's just been some weird accounts and people like impersonating us and Hugo. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, we got to keep this private now.
So it's so disappointing.
He makes people happy. He really does. When we post things, he's like, oh, he's made my whole entire week.
So yeah, exactly. I feel that way all the time. So yeah, it's a bummer that people get weird. But so, I mean, I don't want to be too presumptuous. He looks like he has really good eating habits. But what's the word on the street?
No, actually, no. It's all changed.
Okay.
He was a great eater when we first introduced solid foods to him. And up until pretty much age 2, we'd eat anything I would give him. He never really warmed like green leafy vegetables, but he would eat vegetables. Now, 24 months on, it's been all brown, beige foods, and he's on the anti-keto diet. He doesn't like protein. He Same. Only wants to eat rice and noodles, but if you put anything else on top of the rice or the noodles, it's not. So I always worry about nutrition. It's like, where's he? And he doesn't like eating vitamins or anything like that. But, you know, the pediatrician's like, don't worry about it. He's going to be fine. He's extremely picky now. And I'll be honest, as a professional chef, it guts me. And I know a lot of my chef friends felt the same way when their kids rejected their cooking. Mm-hmm. So I spend an inordinate amount of time, like just, I don't know, an hour a day, probably making his meals. Think about it, like 24 hours a day. It guts me because he just doesn't. And the thing he does like is just cereal and pizza. So we'll see. I'm hoping things change, but it's been a tough go. How about you?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have, for people who don't know, I have two little girls. Zelda is almost 4 and Nova is just a month older than Hugo. So she's 2.5, almost, you know, she'll be 3 in February. And it happens, man. They're good eaters until they hit 2. And then all of a sudden, everything is too yucky.
Literally, that's what they say, yucky. And yeah. I'll just spit it out.
It is hard. But one thing I will tell you is that with Zelda, I just kept preparing things different ways. And she's gotten good at doing the 1 or 2 bite thing. You're not getting that?
No. He looks at it with total disgust and dismay. He's like, no. He's like, you know, just say no. And he's really good at avoiding it. So we're trying not to make food a weird problem for him as he gets older. So, you know, we talked to experts, or not experts, I talked to our doctor, and they're like, you should just have him eat the things he doesn't want to eat the next meal. Mm-hmm. But I feel that's like punishment. Because he won't eat it. He just won't yeah. eat. So if you have any tips, advice, like, I don't know what to do anymore.
Well, they do grow out of it. What I was going to say is it's kind of from 2 to 3. And Zelda was very much like this. She wouldn't eat anything. She would eat white cauliflower. That was like the one vegetable she would eat. I roast it so it kind of tastes like french fries. So, like, put a lot of salt and olive oil, and actually she really liked curry powder. And that was like the one vegetable she would consistently eat. And everything else was white. But, you know, I'd give her a couple months after trying carrots and having them spit them out in her lap. And I try to cook them in different ways. Roasting is nice because it turns basically all vegetables into candy, you know, if you cook it hot enough.
Yeah, I agree.
That's usually been a breakthrough. But it sometimes took 9 months.
No, nothing for me. I have to hide cauliflower rice in his rice. And it's got to be the perfect percentage amount or he'll notice it. And what I also understand is, he actually knows that it's there. And I think he just sort of gives me a win occasionally. I'm surprised at how different, like, his palate for textures is pretty high. So I don't know how, but I'm not able to really sneak too much by him. And you're right, caramelizing vegetables is an amazing way because it naturally increases the sugar content. But he just doesn't like vegetables at all. Zero. I'm afraid he's going to get scurvy. I legitimately think he's going to get scurvy because he doesn't even like orange juice now.
I had that too. Yeah. There is a story of a kid who got scurvy, like a 5-year-old, but he only ate like chicken nuggets and french fries for like literally 4 years straight. So you got some time.
And I would be more comfortable if Hugo actually ate chicken nuggets and french fries. Right. But he doesn't like that. He likes the ketchup. So he uses them as dipping instruments to eat the ketchup. So, you know, I'm just cooking a lot of rice and a lot of pasta and mac and cheese from the box because he doesn't like my homemade stuff. That's not true. He's beginning to like some homemade pasta, but for the most part, anything that is strong in taste, it's just not happening.
And you choose not to have battles.
I've just given up. I mean, I know, like a lot of parents, I went into this thinking I'm going to feed him the best possible products, the most organic this, the farmer's market that, whatever, whatever. And now if I see that he'll eat anything from any product, I'll buy it. And or I'll just give it to him because my main concern throughout the day is he getting enough to eat? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the one thing he drinks an extraordinary amount of is milk. So I'm lucky there.
Yeah, that is
just crushes. He crushes whole milk, but he actually has a really good palate. If it's any other milk, because like I was told we should like bring it down to maybe like 2% or something. If it's grass fed, he won't drink it. If it's not full fat content milk, he's not drinking.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, and I'm assuming Grace has the same problem. Do you guys use the same approach?
I'm making most of the food, but she doesn't like it when Grace makes some food. And I don't know, maybe I should just stop cooking for him and Grace should just make all the food.
Don't do that to her.
No. I mean, I think with me, if he likes the food, he's eating it himself. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't like the food or he's like lukewarm about it, I need Grace to help out.
Oh, I see. So she is a little more coercive, getting in
the, yes,
convincing. That's good. So I'm curious, what does your mom say about this?
She thinks that we're not feeding him enough. And that's the biggest complaint. And my mom says that, Grace's mom says that, and that we're not feeding him enough. What he does like are snacks, but this kid, he'll only eat grapes if they're peeled.
That is demanding.
That is demanding. I think my mother-in-law peeled him a grape once. And from then on, he's like, oh, I can have this without the peel. So I stopped doing that. But we give him a lot of nuts. He eats a lot of pine nuts. That's his nut of choice, which is great.
Wow.
I'm happy to eat that.
So strong.
Yeah. Yeah. He loves pine nuts. That's the problem. Sometimes he'll just eat pine nuts and a glass of milk. And that'll be his meal.
Be a really good squirrel.
Yeah. I mean, he loves cashews. He loves it all. And so I'm really good with that. So I'm happy that the snacks he chooses are like packed with, you know, calories and fat. He likes the more Korean snacks. There's this thing called kuripap, which is like a puffed baked rice snack. He likes a lot of rice. Anything that's rice, he'll eat. Any rice snack, he'll eat. He doesn't like rice crackers, though. And again, I have to take full responsibility. He loves anything that's salty. And and I feel like I screwed up by introducing salt maybe too early into his diet. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to wean him off the salt, which is just the curse of my cooking right now. So I don't know what to do there.
Did your mom say anything about how you were when you were at two, toddler?
No, she didn't. Other than like, I just remember, this is going to sound crazy. So we always have like rice in our house, always. And it's not just like white rice. It's rice with like white rice with barley and other kinds of grains. And it's extremely healthy. I don't like it. I would rather just eat white rice. So right. You go, but that's the rice we got. And as a kid, I would eat it with water. And I would just like make my own little porridge out of the rice. That's also what Hugo does now. If he's going to eat rice, he pours water into it. He mashes it up. And then he eats it. That's it. It's like rice and water. And my mom saw that. And she's like, you did the same thing. I was like, I did. And she's like, you would eat it with American cheese, though. And and again, like I've given Hugo all kinds of beautiful cheese. And the only cheese he wants to eat is American cheese. And he likes it with that rice water mashup. And I don't know what to do. He's just become sort of my worst nightmare for eating.
Oh, man. I thought I was going to get all these tips from you about how to make a like wonderful eater.
No, none. There's none for me. No, I have tips. Like there are some things I've done. And
like there's got to be some like good Korean mom tips. You're like, I want to hear these.
So these are the things that he will eat. And I can tell you very clearly what they are. But what makes it difficult is if I make it like 2 days in a row, I'm out. So I got to find my moments to whip out the big guns so he'll eat something. I mean, one of my friends saw this. He's like, you're crazy. Because I was so worried about nutrition for him, I started to give him salmon roe from Japan, wild king salmon. That's not like the salmon roe that you would often get. Actually, it's the only thing I get from one of my food purveyors from New York, because I buy everything from everywhere most people buy. But this is the one specialty product that I'll get once a month. And it's cured in some white soy. And for me, that's important because a lot of the trout roe or the salmon roe is overly salty because that's how it's preserved. Mm-hmm. This one is much lighter in flavor and in its salt. So I can put that on rice. He'll eat salmon roe like it's popcorn. And I think it's one of the most nutritious, healthiest things for him. And that's what he likes. He likes that so much that I have to like plan days that I can feed him something. That's it. When like I need him to eat something for sure, that's it.
I need that link from you.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. But you know, it's just one of the best foods I think for anybody to eat with all the omega-3 and the fat content in it. It's great for a kid.
Well, not even that. So quick neuroscience lesson, that the form of DHA, which is the omega-3 fatty acid that's very concentrated in fish roe, is lipophilic, which is actually much better for your brain. It crosses the blood-brain barrier more readily and actually is much more effective at helping brain growth, brain healing, preventing dementia. So it's like you're not making that up. It's better than just fish. It's actually a different form of DHA.
Well, I'm so happy that I have literally the expert telling me that, because I just felt it was the right thing. In all my research that I did, I was like, oh, this is actually like really great for him. And it's the one food he has not stopped eating. The other thing that I feel like I ruined for him, because when we moved to California, the avocados are so great.
Yeah.
He won't touch an avocado now. And that's the one piece of advice I would give people is, if you have a picky eater as a child, at least I did, like I thought I was varying it up a lot more than I was, because avocados are so good, especially for a kid to eat, he just doesn't like them anymore. And that with some rice, that's a great dinner for him. And he just doesn't want to do that anymore.
Oh, so you think you gave him too much?
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
And he got too I take full responsibility for him not wanting to eat avocados like he used to, because that was like one of his favorite foods. That was the very first food he ate when he was his first solid food. You know, we mashed it up with some breast milk and he just would eat that all the time. And that stopped. The other thing that I ruined, again, is eggs. He used to eat eggs all the time. What is your stance on giving kids eggs? Like if they eat two eggs a day, is that too much for them?
I don't think so. The only issue is it can be an allergen. So people have to be careful to introduce small amounts consistently over time, apparently. But I gave Zelda too many eggs, I think, and she got an egg allergy and ended up in the ER.
Oh, no.
And then, and then I gave her salmon roe like 3 days later and we ended up in the ER again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. She was 6 months old. It was awful.
Well, we thought he had all these allergies too because he's breaking out in hives. Thankfully, he passed. He doesn't have any allergies, knock on wood, but it was more of the insect bites and stuff. But I thought it might have been the egg thing, but he just doesn't like eating them now at all. So
that's, I've heard that's common. I've heard a lot of kids don't like to eat eggs.
Really?
Yeah.
When he was before two, I could any kind of egg, soft boiled, scrambled, whatever. He was eating it. The one egg that he will eat, because he doesn't realize it's an egg, I don't think, is if I make a chawan mushi. And that's a go-to that I make all the time. That's probably the best thing I could tell anybody listening to make, not only for their kids or for themselves. And I make it in this bowl that I've helped work on, the any day bowl. And it's, I put two eggs and I'll put any liquid. It could just be water with a little soy sauce, sesame oil. It could be any kind of broth. And I'll just put two eggs, maybe, I don't know, what's the measurement? Pint or... I never take any measurements. Like a pint of liquid? Yeah, maybe a little bit less than a pint. And I'll just mix it up with chopsticks, not too many air bubbles. And I'll put it in a microwave covered for 10 minutes at 40% power. Mm. 30 to 40% power. Oftentimes I'll make that maybe in the morning or the night before. You can easily do it with three eggs. It doesn't matter. It might break on you. So you got to figure out the right temperature for your microwave. When I say temperature, the wattage, every microwave is different. And like 900 seems to be the standard, but it's all different. So you got to dial it in a little bit. But
right.
I make that at least once a week and I'll serve that with rice. The only constant in his diet is rice. If I don't serve him rice, he gets really upset. And if I switch out rice, it's noodles. And he's open to, thank God there's all kinds of noodles, but making an egg custard, a savory egg custard, he has no idea that he's really eating an egg because it has the texture of like very soft silken tofu.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. So that's a go-to, but I'm having struggles having him eat breakfast because right now he just wants to eat cereal every morning and he doesn't even eat the cereal. He just wants the sugary cereal that I'm choosing not to give him, but somehow he just knows that if he waits, I think Christina Tosi would be so proud of this. He just waits and waits and waits till the milk has leached out every ounce and gram of sugar, and then he just drinks the milk. So you guys have any tips? Great.
I'm curious, actually, is he snacking often?
Well, that's the debate right now, is especially with my mom and my mother-in-law, is they're like, he needs to be eating all day, every day. Because in Korean culture, they want your child to be as fat as humanly possible. And they always complain, he's too skinny, he's too skinny, he's too skinny. So feeding him snacks has been great because he's eating. But we felt that that also might be the reason why he doesn't want to eat any meals.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's the reason.
But we've also tried it. Yeah. Even when he's hungry, he won't eat certain things. He just won't because of the texture. He just doesn't like it. He doesn't like chicken. He doesn't like salmon. And I would cook rice. I use dashi. If you're a parent and you need something flavorful to cook a lot of things in, make dashi. And there's Japanese style and there's a Korean version as well. I make a Korean version a lot more than I do the Japanese, which is the katsuobushi, the dried bonito that's been fermented and smoked and shaved. And it looks, people are familiar with it now. And I'll make that occasionally. And I make that in a teapot because you should brew it like a tea. And sometimes I'll make a big batch and I'll store it in pine containers in the fridge because it's not going to go bad. But more often than not, I'm making in Korean, it's called dashi pack. If you go to an Asian supermarket, I think you probably get it online. They're like dried fish, seaweed, maybe some shrimp. There's different kinds of variations of it. And it's in a enclosed tea pack. So you just, you know, steep it like a tea and you have a beautiful broth that you can season however you want. If I didn't have that, I think I'd be totally screwed. totally screwed. Because it's the one thing that I'm able to like give some flavor. I know that it makes things more delicious. There's more umami in it. And the one dish that I would make a lot, and I haven't made it, maybe I'm going to reintroduce it this week, is I will wash rice. I will add enough dashi so it covers it. I don't know. Again, like measurements are a little bit difficult. So it's, you know, maybe a half an inch covering the rice. And I'll add whatever seasoning I want. Salt, fish sauce. I use fish sauce a lot. I use Redbud fish sauce. And I'll just cook that off. 12 minutes. The easy recipe is 12 minutes, high flame. So once it starts to boil, you lower the temperature to like a low flame. Mm-hmm. And it should, in theory, almost all in 12 minutes, if you cooked it right, all the water should have been absorbed by the rice or evaporated. That's when you can either turn up the stove to like get a lot of the crunchy rice bits on the bottom for like another minute or so, or you just turn it off. Again, temperature, elevation matters a great deal. You shouldn't open up the lid. You don't have to have a clay pot. You can do this in any kind of pot, like a Le Creuset or something like that. And if it looks like most of it's been absorbed, just turn it off and you let it rest for the exact amount of time that you cooked it. And I'm using short grain rice. And as it's resting, I'll take some salmon, I'll slice it, and I'll toss it in any kind of whatever, salt, soy, whatever. Just enough, and then I'll layer it on top of the rice as it's resting. And 12 minutes later, it's perfectly cooked. And then I mash it all up. I'll put some sesame oil on it. He loves sesame oil. And some Korean kim, the seaweed laver that you can get anywhere. And I'll crush that up. That would be the holy grail, is to have dinner that the adults want to eat and he wants to eat. That's a great dish. And you can put scallions. You could put any kind of mushrooms on it. Just that way of cooking rice is a great way that everyone should cook. I just think it's such an easy way to make a dinner. But he doesn't, it's the one rice now that he doesn't love eating. And I've stopped that repertoire. And I think maybe, again, to my fault, he just gets tired of things so quickly that I have to be more ahead of the game. And I've been a little bit lazier just because things have been busy.
Yeah, that makes sense. It is hard. I use the seasons a lot because it just reminds me to try something new. I'm like, oh, right, beets, right. Seasons for that. Like my kids have gotten sick of broccoli. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. You've eaten like 5,000 gallons of it. So, yeah.
You forget as parents. Like, oh, maybe they're not eating this because you've given it to them 25 times in a month.
Well, let's talk about feeding Grace, because I think you're more successful with those Grace Wanted.
So easy. Oh, my God. Thank God. We're changing topics.
I've recently taken a peek at your new book, and it is so cool. First of all, you talk about cooking without recipes, and I can, you know, hear you here struggling to give a recipe. And I thank you. Thank you so much. I've been telling people for years. I actually have a course. I've been teaching people to do this for years. And I'm just curious how you came to that conclusion, because I imagine in restaurants, recipes are like super important.
If you work at certain restaurants where everything is measured to the milligram, it's about standardization. And places like, I don't want to name names, there are restaurants that do that. And it's incredibly effective because it protects the floor, right? You may not have the best meal, but it's not going to be the worst meal for you. I'm not a huge fan of it. There's different schools of thought about cooking. Some of the very best restaurants in the world, there is no deviation from what the recipe is given for that day. The only way and how I'm 100% pro recipes is the education of a new cook and chocolate making and things that need to be extremely exact in its creation. So that's when recipes and measurement are just imperative. You can't do it without it. But I never cooked at home. As crazy as that sounds, I never ever cooked at home until Grace got pregnant. So I had no idea what it was like to cook at home because it's something I never did. And that sounds crazy, but I think I've discovered a lot of different things and I have a lot of different philosophies now about cooking at home. I won't say it's a negative, but things have gone astray with the importance of how you cook in a professional kitchen. What works in a professional kitchen does not work at all sometimes in a home kitchen.
Right. But you still need a foundation, right? You need a foundation of food and science and how it all works together to make something that tastes delicious.
Yeah. Like, you need a basic understanding of science. I think science is so important. I also think this idea of cooking without a recipe isn't just like putting your, you know, licking your finger and putting it in the air to judge where the wind is going or whatever. It's like the closest thing I could say is maybe is a little bit more improv. Like, I'm friends with a lot of successful comedians. People are like, oh, you just go up there and do whatever. It's like, no, that took a lot of work to be able to improvise. And one of the things that improvising is reading the other actor or comedian on stage or reading the audience. And I love data. I think cooking intuitively is actually about being much more open to things, not closed-minded, and understanding that variables are changing. One of the variables are the ingredients that you cook with. Like, it's beyond stupid to me to be so pot committed to a recipe and then complain, it doesn't taste the way I remembered it. Well, it's probably because your ingredients are constantly changing, you know? And I think people have the most inflammatory thing I can probably say is recipes and the blind adherence to recipes are probably why people are so bad at cooking.
So 100%. So I interviewed a while ago, I interviewed several dozen people to figure out why they didn't cook at home. And then I interviewed several dozen people that do cook at home. And one of the things that I kept hearing over and over again from the people who had failed to cook at home and didn't like it was that they would go to the grocery store with a list. Like, sometimes they'd have to go to two or three stores to find everything on that list for this recipe. They don't really know what they're doing. So it would make it and it would be kind of bad. Then they'd still have a half an onion in the fridge, a few random carrots in the fridge. Those would all end up going bad because they wouldn't know what else to do with them. And then their food didn't taste that good. So they didn't really like it. And then their leftovers would go bad. And they're like, I just wasted so much time and so much money. And it wasn't very rewarding. But it's largely because they were stuck in this idea that they had to make it this way and they didn't know how to fix it.
Yeah. I think it's this blind pursuit of getting things perfect or making things authentic. And I think, especially in the kitchen, this is something you could think about culture at large, but fetishizing about perfection, especially in food, gets in the way of good. And at home, just make something good and tasty. Who gives a shit? It doesn't have to be perfect. People forget, make delicious food and reverse engineer from there. Like, it, and this idea of improvising or using ingredients that are not exactly what the recipe says, like, that's smart.
Right, because you have them.
Yeah. Right. And it's also like thinking like, oh, you know, this recipe says that I need to use, lemon juice, but I don't. I have lime juice. It's like, I know a lot of people that are like, well, I can't make the recipe. It's like, are you fucking crazy? Like, yes, substitute it. That was like the most basic thing. Or like sugar or green and yellow peppers. Like, I think people, if you don't have a fresh like Tiber chili, but you have other means of spice, like, that's an easy way. So let's just say you have Tabasco sauce. Oh my God, I now have made my dish a little bit more acidic. So maybe you need to add a little bit of sweetness to balance things out. So it's constantly a give and take. So I don't know how to convey this more, but I really think that I've been trying to find some kind of comp or analogy for people that want to follow recipes. Like, if I post anything on social media about a dish and there's not a recipe attached to it, people get very upset. Like, they feel entitled to the idea that, like, I need to be told exactly what to do. I know a lot of these people and they're smart, open-minded individuals. And I'm like, why are you so blindly adhering anything about recipes? And I just think it's actually unhealthy. So I found like that maybe I was doing my own podcast and I was like, oh, I think the best way to tell somebody that is a recipe follower, you know, like a zealot of following recipes, how, I don't want to say stupid, but how there's other ways to do it, is like, if you told somebody, if you're going to have sexual relations with another person, you need to follow how the textbooks, you know, this is how you do it.
Sexy. So,
yeah, it's like, people would laugh at that. People say, that's so dumb. I don't, that's not, you know, it's like 5 minutes of this to 6 minutes of, you know, like, this is the position. You don't do that. People can, I think, genuinely understand
that. Well, you could do that. Absurd. It would just be boring. Right?
Yeah. So if you can understand the absurd stupidity of that, That's almost the exact same thing you're doing in something else that is sensual and pleasurable, and that's eating and cooking that food. So if you can understand that principle on sex, then it's weirdly the same principle for cooking and following a recipe. It's just open up your eyes a little bit, and I think there's so much more that you can experience.
I love it. Okay, so if somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh my God, I've been doing this wrong my whole life, where do you start?
As in cooking, I just think mistakes. Make, you know what? Like, I tell people to start off cooking eggs. You know, like, eggs are not expensive. They're cheap. And, like, just start cooking things where you can screw up, right? You can only learn by making mistakes. Make mistakes. And that's what I mean by recipes are the great obstacle to becoming a better cook, is because you're not learning anything. And cook something that is affordable enough for you to screw up. You're not going to be that afraid to experiment and to mix and match, because that's how cuisine starts, is by happy accidents and finding your voice and learning how to season. The biggest issue is people don't know how to salt foods properly. You know, my problem is I probably use too much salt. So that's where I would start, is like, just start cooking. And I think even before that, when you want to cook without a recipe, it's not just like going in blindly. You have to be prepared. You know, you have to have things around you to be able to work with, to make decisions on the fly. And cooking on the fly doesn't mean not being prepared. Mm. It is having tools at your disposal and ingredients at your disposal so you can make decisions and tailor to what you need in that moment. And like, I was doing this morning, for example. I had a leave because we were doing press for the show and the book. And I oftentimes make lunch when I make breakfast. And I was like, I have 30 minutes. I had bought some pork chops thinking I was going to make, because Grace really likes tonkotsu, right? Like the fried pork chop with panko. And I had some cabbage, and I was going to make bulldog sauce, the whole thing. But I was like, I don't have time. I can buy that pork chops another day. But I don't know what else is there. I'm pressed for time. I'm going to make this now. I'm going to use the pork chops now. And I started to just figure out what I was going to do. I was like, oh, I'm going to season. I seasoned with some savory salt. I started the pan with some garlic and some olive oil. And I didn't want to dredge the pork chops. I don't know what I was thinking. So I just like got a bowl and I just put flour in it. And I just started mixing it up with salt and pepper and the savory salt. And I started to roast those off. And then I added onions. And then next thing you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to add some Calabrian chilies to it. But I didn't, because Grace can't eat that because she's nursing Gus. Mm. So like, I had to change that in the moment. So I just like, okay, I'm going to make this more like pork chop marsala, instead of like a fiery, creamy tomato braised pork chop that I was going to serve with spaghetti. And like, that's easy to do. I have all the same ingredients. I'm just not going to add tomatoes. Mm. It's pretty simple. I mean, again, I made that decision on the fly because I knew that I had Calabrian chilies. I wanted to use them, but oh, I have some button mushrooms that I need to get rid of. I didn't have any cream for the sauce, so I added just an ungodly amount of butter.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. And it worked out great. So I do that all the time. It's just making decisions on the fly. But part of that is knowing what's in my pantry, knowing what's in my refrigerator. And that is the one thing that, again, when I say professional things shouldn't be brought over to the kitchen, it's the techniques, it's the certain like stupid things you do in a professional kitchen that work in a professional kitchen. The one thing for certain that you should adopt from a professional kitchen is your mise en place, which is French for everything in its place. It's the thing you hear all the time in top kitchens. I don't cook without knowing everything that's in my kitchen and pantry. Like, I know everything. I know what's frozen here. I know the date that something's going to expire here. I know the cheese that I got to use to make XYZ. So it makes it a lot easier when I'm thinking about what's in my pantry all the time.
Right, because it narrows down your options.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I was going to make a salad today and somebody must have eaten one of the other nice avocados, so I couldn't use it today. It's like, okay, but like, that was going to be the protein in the salad, but I had half a rotisserie chicken. So I just pulled the chicken and that was the protein for the salad. It's like, they're just variables that you can switch out for one another.
Yeah. You know, when I was just thinking, I taught myself to cook when I was in grad school because I lived in San Francisco and then I went to one fancy dinner and I realized I could never eat normal food again, but I didn't have any money. So I started teaching myself to cook. And I started with vegetables, because vegetables are not very expensive. You know, you can get a bunch of kale, some broccoli, like for a few bucks, you can have enough food for several meals for one or two people. And that was a great way to get started because, well, first of all, with a vegetable, you don't have to worry about getting too sick if you taste it while you're cooking it. So, you know, if you undercooked a piece of broccoli, you're going to live if you taste it. and also you can explore like pretty much any cuisine you're curious about on top of a vegetable. So that was a really, really, that was something I did that made it easier to kind of get my foot wet. I got scared of cooking meat, you know, until later than I sort of, once I felt pretty confident with, I knew how to use acid and salt and heat and all those things. And once I was there, then I felt more confident to use a more expensive kind of meat or something like that.
But that's, you just described exactly how somebody, I know we just told people don't follow recipes, but this is the one recipe you should follow if you want, or if you're bad at cooking, you want to be better and more intuitive. You just gave a great example. Start messing around with vegetables, potatoes, broccoli, learning your palate, getting a little bit better at knife skills. A lot gets lost, and I tell this to my own cooks all the time, about the, yes, visual food needs to be beautiful, blah, blah, blah. But people talk about aromas and all these different intricate things that you can taste. At the end of the day, you can taste five things on your palate. That's all you need to be a master of. And don't worry about anything else, like salt. I mean, I feel like Samin right now. Salt, fat, right. Acid, heat, it's a real thing. Umami, bitterness is a really important thing. Acidity is so crucial to tying things together in food. Like, I love adding acid and sweetness to food. And again, my professional philosophy for acid in a dish is, if you can taste the acidity in a dish, you add it too much. Mm-hmm. Unless the dish is supposed to be like ceviche or something like that. I'm adding acid or drops of lemon juice all the time. I'm adding agave. I use agave all the time because it's easier to sort of mix into a dish rather than sugar. And it's not something to make food taste sweet. It's to balance it out. They're like an electric bass in a rock band. It just rounds everything out a little bit. At the end of the day, like learning to salt your food is probably more important than anything else. And doing that with vegetables is a great way of learning.
And you touched on something a minute ago that, you know, your palate isn't the same as someone else's. So like one of the best reasons to cook at home and to cook without a recipe is to A, figure out and B, make food that you like. Because then that's like a great way to cook healthy as well. Because if you can make healthy food that tastes good, then you have nothing to complain about not being healthy.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, like I ask Grace all the time, like just for lunch today, I said, where do you want to take this? I made a salad. I was like, where do you want to take the salad dressing? You want it where? Like, what part of the world? And she hates it when I ask that. But, like, I want to know because whatever she's fancying, I want to make that for her. But right now, she just wants me making Japanese food. She normally would want Korean food, but she can't eat spicy. And she really likes, I would probably say, she has said it in the past, and her mother-in-law, they don't necessarily love my Korean cooking because it's not homey enough. It doesn't taste like something they're comfortable eating. Like, my mom hates my Korean food, too. She just doesn't like it at all.
You're kidding me.
No, they don't like it. They don't like it. I swear to God. They think it's different. Because things are a little bit different. Like, I'll make Korean pindaetok, which I made recently, but sometimes I'll make it with lentils. Like, sometimes they're not comfortable with the substitutions, or I'm just mixing things around that I know I can make good, but it's a little bit different than something that people have nostalgia over and they're comfortable with. So Japanese food right now is something I make at least one dish a day. I'm making Japanese because it's what Grace wants right now. It's usually something soupy or something that is mild. And it's also very versatile. And it's also... It also sort of hurts my feelings. It's what everyone in my household wants me to cook these days now. So I think they're telling me something. I should just make Japanese food.
You know, speaking of Japanese food and you know, the different things, that's one of the things I really love about, you know, kind of the, I think the intro of the book is sort of, in a lot of ways, the most important part, where you talk about setting up what's going to be in your house. And I love the way you broke down the pantry into, you know, like, These are the acids that I use. These are the spices that I use. These are the aromatics that I use. But then you broke it up like, well, I cook a lot of Korean and Japanese food, and that's why I have this. And then your co-author was like, well, I make a lot of Indian food, so this is why I have this and this. And it was so cool because with that framework, you can see how you can mix and match And that Absolutely. Way, exactly. Like if, like, yeah, if I have mint in my pantry, that means, like you were talking about salad dressing. If I have mint, that means I'm making Vietnamese salad dressing. And if I have cilantro, yeah. I'm either making like Indian or Mexican. But like, you kind of have to get there. And sometimes I start like with a restaurant dish I really like and then re-engineer it backwards, reverse engineer it from there.
But that's what professional chefs do all the time. They went to a restaurant, they had a dish that made them really mad because it was so good. And they just go back to the kitchen and they try to like recreate it and like try to figure out what makes it so good. So, you know, like this is just what I think good cooks should do is be inquisitive, be curious, and be open, right? Like we wrote a lot of that book in New York City. I've been in California for like some time now and everything I make is not what I cooked in New York City because I have the abundance of Southern California. There's so much more vegetables in our diet because guess what? I'm sorry, New York, like as much as I love the Green Market, it's not as good as the stuff I can get here. And it's lighter. Everything truth. Is lighter. It's just the truth. So, you know, it's like, I would be an idiot to like not use the berries, to not use the zucchini, to not use the, you know, the sugar snaps will be coming in season in like a month and a half, but all over again. There's like two springs here mm-hmm. in Southern California. Like people don't even know that. Like, and like, I now know, like I haven't bought strawberries because it's not strawberry season quite yet, but it's the blueberries are really ripe. So it's like part of that is, again, you said cooking with the seasons. I just have a hard time seeing anybody move to a place and being so steadfast in their ways as to never changing how they cook.
Yeah, I've had to leave New York. Like being from California, I was like, I can eat at restaurants, but I don't have enough produce here. I have to go.
I remember you telling me that yeah. a while back. But it's true. It's the West Coast fruits and veg. I mean, every time I go to the farmers, like, I'm like, they have fucking dates. They have like real dates here.
That grew here. Yeah,
they grew here. It's unbelievable.
Well, like I was saying, I basically taught myself to cook. Exactly what you're talking about. I didn't have any skills. Nobody ever taught me anything, but I had great ingredients because I lived in San Francisco and I would just go find things and then take them home and figure out things to do that messed up a lot. But usually it was edible, you know, it just like wasn't the best. And, but you know, I maybe once or twice I threw out a whole dish that got ruined in some way, but, and that's how I learned. And that is what I did. But it's interesting because all I learned was my way, you know, and I've eaten in a lot of nice restaurants, but I've never felt like I could cook like you. But one of the things that's cool is reading your book. Now I feel like I can, like I'm going to go fill up my spice drawer with some Korean goodies and some Indian goodies. And I feel like I'm going to go on a new adventure doing what I've done in the past, but like I'm already at the next level and it's really exciting.
I mean, having spices and a good ones at that. It's just a game changer. Like you can go any direction. I can't stress that enough. If you're bored with cooking and you want to explore, if you want to take it to the next level, I getting better produce, getting better products, that is a whole nother thing, right? Like you just already said, like I stepped up to meat because that's the next challenge. I think for a lot of home cooks, cooking fish is the next challenge. I don't want to talk about fish right now. That's a whole mess of a situation because of how people buy really, really bad fish. That's just something we cook very little because I just don't think you can get the right quality. I'd rather people buy frozen fish because I just know that the floor of it is way better than anything you might see fresh in a lot of supermarkets. So the next highest level, like if you're going to view this as a video game, I think is learning how to incorporate all the vegetable things you've cooked, all the proteins you've cooked, and merge it with new ways of thinking about food through spices. And dry pantry ingredients from around the world. It is a never ending quest for that kind of stuff. And you can simply just start with great black pepper. It is a life altering moment when you taste really fresh black pepper from like Cambodia or Kerala in India, because when you taste that, you realize like, oh, this is why Europe needed it, change the world. Like you see food in Technicolor and everything was black and white.
Totally. Great example or great way to put that.
So like, it doesn't have to be crazy. It's just like, whatever you're comfortable with, just go a little bit deeper and maybe you can get it from a different region. And I can't stress that enough. Like you don't need a huge variety of spices. You just need a couple of really good ones. And you know, that's the next level. I'm still on that journey of figuring out what that is. But you know, we're talking about Indian spices. Like when I talked to Priya Krishna, I have no idea half the spices she's talking about, because a lot of it is proprietary to each family. That's super interesting to me. But I also know, like, I can't really make that stuff right now because Grace can't eat it, and Hugo definitely doesn't want anything like that right now. So I'm just trying to figure out how to make flavorful foods that my wife can eat, trying to introduce these same things to Hugo. But that's one thing. I'm always trying to have him taste something, usually unsuccessful.
The science says that picky kids, sometimes they have to taste it 15 to 20 times, but will accept it eventually. Usually they will accept it. And I've made, so Zelda's totally come out of it. I even got her to eat mushrooms the other day. I couldn't believe it. I got her to like a beet. She still turns her nose up at some of the nice cheeses, which kills me. But Nova's in the crux of kind of where you are. Not quite as bad. She will eat some stuff, but she spits stuff out at me all the time. I think that if you just stick with it, I think you'll make a lot of progress on that front. Yeah, and I'm just really grateful for what you and Priya have created. I think it's such a great starting point for somebody learning to cook at home and get over those fears, I think. And may even make something that's delicious. Who knows?
Well, I hope my son can follow your kid's path, because I was talking to Pablo Torre, the ESPN journalist, and he was like, why do you guys care so much about this? Because it's my job. It's like, chefs take extraordinary pride in getting somebody to like their food. And when it's your own child, you just want them to have the best. And it's something I understand so much. I don't know if I gave a lot of good tips, but it's just, you got to keep at it. And it's hard. It's definitely hard. And I think the thing I have to tell myself is not fall in the trap of giving them the things that I know they're going to like, all the time, like a hot dog.
Right. That's the trap. Right. You kind of need to do that later. That you said it's your job. Like, I feel like my job is to make my kid eat healthy. You have, like, my kid's got to eat vegetables. So yeah, it is really, really hard when they're like, yucky, pah. But we're getting there. I think we're a little bit ahead. So I think there's some light at the end of the tunnel for you.
God, I hope so. I hope so. And I just want them to eat the meals that we're making, because I don't know about you, but I get tired of having to make separate meals for each dinner.
Yeah.
Or each lunch. It's just,
That shouldn't be your fate. So why don't you tell us more about where we can learn more about your book and where people can find you on the interwebs?
Most of my social media handles are David Chang. You can find a lot of the products that we're making on Momofuku's website.
That stuff's great.
Yeah, thank you.
I love your soy sauce.
Thank you. That's the one thing too that that's been a godsend, is a lot of the stuff that we're actually making that our lab helped create. Like, I know what's behind it. So definitely Hugo likes those things. We have a TV show coming out on October 26th on Hulu called The Next Thing You Eat. We take a peek around what's around the corner with food, tech, and the restaurant industry. Yeah, this book is coming out, Cooking at Home. That's October 21st, and you can get that anywhere, I think. Hopefully you're supporting your local bookstore as well. But I didn't realize there was so much going on, but there's a lot. There's a lot.
You do have a lot going on. Well, and you're a new dad, or a second-time new dad.
It feels like a first-time dad. Like, you know what I hate about this whole being a parent again? Is everybody that's told you that it's going to be hard, it's going to be challenging, all of these things, they're all right. Nobody's undersold the challenging nature of this. And what I'm surprised is how much I forgot from the first go-round. But,
well, I feel like the second baby is slightly easier, but if you have a toddler, all that is erased by a lot.
Oh my Lord. I you know what? I just don't know how my mom did it for four kids. So
holy moly.
Yeah, shout out to all the moms out there. I have no idea how you guys have done it for so many years. Forever. Yeah.
All right, Dave. Well, thank you so much. And everybody should pick up Cooking at Home. Thanks for listening today. Definitely check out Cooking at Home by Dave Chang and Priya Krishna, which, not kidding, is currently a number one bestseller on Amazon in microwave cooking. Seriously, though, it's a fabulous book, and I'm sure you'll love it. And if you follow at David Chang on Instagram, you may get a glimpse of the cutest toddler in the world every now and then. Thank you, and I will see you next time.